at this point, we've got about 10 more minutes, and we can have questions to any of our speakers. So, and Kevin, are there microphones hooked up? Are there microphones on? Oh, yeah, you still got your levelers on. Okay, do you have a question for any of our speakers? Yes, Representative Hintz.
I guess just for all of you, and I'm sort of thinking out loud as we get ready to start our budget process, but usually every session, whether you're on a biennial or annual budget, you have a governor sort of, you know, state, you know, what their goals are with each budget, and that's going to vary. You know, in this case, not raising taxes or even cutting taxes seems to be the mantra of, you know, what this budget's, you know, going to be about, with less of a discussion of services. I guess, you know, when I was listening to Mr. Merriman, I was thinking of the budget more as a planning document, you know, enacting a vision, and then, you know, with the subsequent speakers trying to, you know, figure out how we might do this better. You know, I guess, what do you do when the approach of the budget seems to be focused, perhaps not on a services, you know, aspect, but that has a priority, you know, of, in this case, lower taxes or not raising any taxes. I mean, that's our starting point. Is that a valid approach to a budget?
Yeah. I think you ought to right-size government that fits Wisconsin, whatever that means. I'm not saying it should be smaller or bigger. Just you ought to right-size it. But if you're going to focus on taxes, my encouragement would be to not focus on where can we whittle away at the tax base. You know, we'll start exempting this item from the sales tax or give this kind of special credit. Somebody raised the credit issue before. We'll give a special credit against the income tax. I mean, think of it as keeping the base broad and set the rates to generate the revenue you want rather than chipping away at the base and creating all kinds of perversions in the tax system.
I guess what I would urge you to do is, you know, if you, you're essentially, government is accepting a budget constraint. Okay, this is how much money we have to start with. And within that, on the services, you're going to have to figure out how to fit within that box. I think that's very much a, kind of the new paradigm that a lot of people are talking about with respect to government, rather than looking at each service individually. So then you really have to think about, okay, so what are the trade-offs? You're not getting the choice to trade off a service against a revenue source. But within services, you have the choice of which services are we going to take? Which services are we going to be able to support? And just to try and make those, I think the decisions will be better if the trade-offs are as explicit as possible. So, okay, we've got to cut however much money out of the budget. What are we going to do it? Let's line up the alternatives. Let's use the kind of things Steve's talking about to make informed decisions.
For us in Washington, this is the first session that I can remember, and I've been for 34 of them, where there's both parties, and there's no one's even thinking about taxes or fees. We have three initiatives on the ballot in November, tax-related initiatives. One was to put a state income tax. We don't have an income tax at all. To put a state income tax on people that make over $250,000, that failed by I don't know some huge number.
Two-thirds to one-third.
And then we had another initiative that took taxes that last year's legislature, when we had that discussion, put on for pop and candy, and it repealed that by some, you know, 80% repealed those taxes. And then we had an initiative that would require any future legislature, including this year's legislature, to have two-thirds vote of the legislature to have a new tax of any kind. And that passed by an equal number. So there's no, both parties, there's no even discussion this year, the first year that I can remember, of any revenue enhancements, taxes, at all. So it's all on the spending side. Everything's on the spending side.
Yeah.
Hi, Sandy Pash, State Representative. There have been some discussions about sales taxes that are then put into a selected fund, like here an extra penny for education or an extra couple cents on sugar beverages for dental care and things like that. What are your thoughts on those? Are those gimmicky? Are they effective?
I will say states earmark a tremendous share of their revenue. It's not unusual for states to do that. It prevents kind of those explicit trade-offs that I talked about in general. So I think usually those earmarks, that putting funds for a specific purpose, saying, you know, the lottery funds will go for education or whatever, I think those generally are not the best policymaking process. I think a lot of times they're a political compromise to get the revenue through. I think a lot of times they don't have the intended purpose. So if you say we're going to put all of the new lottery revenue into education, but you're also putting income tax revenue into education, you know, you can just give less income tax revenue in exchange for the more lottery revenue, so education doesn't get more money, and people who support it for more money have sort of been, you know, not got what they wanted anyway. So in general, I think we should try and resist those to the extent that we can.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with him.
Representative Penny Bernard Chaber, and I have a very broad question. Are there examples of very critical and productive tax reforms that have been done at various states or in our country that have been successful? We keep nibbling around the edges. We do excise tax. We do this. We do that. But we never really get to the root of the problem, which is a true critical and productive tax reform or change that could be beneficial to everybody.
Be honest with you, it's hard to find states that have really done major tax reform. On the sales tax side, Florida did it in the mid-'80s, in 86, 87. They ended up backing away ultimately from that. Texas, Massachusetts did some and never even implemented it around 90, 91. Texas did some reasonably broad reforms around 2000. And so, there's a few states that have done some things, but you know, the broadest never even stayed around to see the light of day. There has been this, as I noted, this strong downward pattern in rates on the individual income tax front. But what you haven't seen is the efforts to deal with the income tax and make sure that the base stays appropriate. And if anything, there's been this tendency to narrow down the base and sort of push it, become more of a wage tax than an income tax, and, you know, with potentially detrimental effects on work effort. I wish I had some great examples to give you. They tend to be, let's call them narrower reforms. There's some good reform on the corporate income tax going on in many states right now. There are weaknesses of the kind of changes that Ohio and Michigan and Texas have done, what they are facing up to is two really key issues. The first one is it's difficult for a bunch of structural reasons to tax corporations that sell into a state. And it can put you at a disadvantage relative to other companies. That's been one I think important step that Ohio has done is that everybody's in the base. And I think that's a lot of why Ohio passed the legislation that it did. And then secondly, within the corporate income tax itself, what 11 states have done recently is to recognize that when we – do you know much about the corporate income tax? I don't want to get too technical. Yeah. Okay. So the way it works is, you know, it's got this three factors: sales, property, and payroll that go in the formula, and we locate the goods where the goods go. The lingo is on a destination basis, but the services normally are where they're produced. And 11 states have recently moved to recognize that taxing services where they're produced, particularly if you're increasing the weight on the sales factor, is a negative for production of those services. And so that's been a good reform. So there are some narrow reforms taking place that I think do make some sense.
I would add on the property tax, some of the reforms that have been taking place is moving to credits on the income tax to try and deal with some of the regressivity problems of the property tax. That's, I don't think there have really been broad reforms, but I think there's incremental movement in that direction.
Okay, another quick question? Oh, okay. This will be our last one, so it'll need to be quick.
Hi, Dennis Winters. I don't know much about state tax regimes across the country, but I know in Wisconsin, for example, you can deduct your property tax against your tax bill. You can deduct, I think, your state income tax against your federal income tax bill. If you shift as there's a lot of talk about lowering the income tax and shifting it to sales tax, for example, which you cannot deduct, has there been any studies done across states on what the reduction would be in state citizens' purchasing power and effect on businesses within a state? And if so, what results were found?
Okay, you're talking about moving more to a sales tax and away from an income tax? Is that your... I'm trying to understand the point.
Right. And given that we'll have an equal total revenue, all right, yeah. shifting
the deduction
tax
of one
from,
and not the other.
From one application to another?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, of course, the sales tax has, in fact, been deductible in recent years from the federal tax return. So it's not just been the income tax in more recent years. Where that goes in the longer term is hard to see. We did those estimates for Tennessee, and when Tennessee was talking about an income tax, and there's significant revenue savings for people with deductibility of the income tax in years in which a sales tax is not deductible. Having said that, in the average state, about 25% of people itemize, so that still means about 75% are not benefiting from the deductibility component of it.